Sharon's guest today started her professional life as a journalist, but took a less traveled fork in the road and has made her career as a painter for many years. Known for her romantic and atmospheric paintings and landscapes, Rosanna Harden Hall recently added a new artistic project. She's turned the cottage behind her Woodruff Place home into an artistic gallery and villa that can be rented for intimate gatherings, including parties and committee meetings. Let's find out more about Rosanna's life and career and about La Villa dell'Artista.
How did you know that you were an artist? You didn't start down that path, did you?
No, as an adult, I meant to go into pre-law, and I studied international relations at Purdue. And then I graduated and I got into journalism, and I worked for the various newspapers, including the Washington Star and the Indianapolis News. And while I was at the News, I did a story on how artists live at Heron. And I found they lived in a very bohemian lifestyle. It was fun doing the article. And so I was offered a job. At that time, the museum was breaking away from the art school, moving out to 38th Street. And that left the school without a public relations person. So I started that job and then went through 4 years again, my second bachelor's in fine arts. So that's how I got my official formal training in art.
When you took that first class, did you think, well, you know, maybe I'd like to actually pursue a degree? Or were you just thinking, hey, well, one of the benefits of working here is taking classes, so maybe I'll just...
No, I was committed to it. I had been thinking about it for several years. I'd studied some art, like in France. I decided this is, from day one, I was absolutely in love with art. I loved every class. I loved doing the art. And it was just a love affair from the beginning.
Did your fellow students or some of your professors at the time look at you kind of funny? Since you already, obviously, you already had a degree, but you had a degree in a much more sort of corporate, mainstream, button-down field. Did they look at you and say, what on earth are you doing here?
Well, I don't think I was mainstream, button-down look, but that was during the hippie era. Mm-hmm. And I hadn't gone through my hippie years when I was a teenager, so I kind of fell into that during the 60s. No, I think I fit in very well with it. I was a little bit older at the time, but now when I see my fellow students, you know, we all seem like the same generation.
Absolutely.
We're all peers. So.
The same artistic age, if you will.
Yeah, right.
So where did you go from there? Suddenly you had a second degree. Did you think, well, now I could write for an art journal or cover art for a newspaper, or what was sort of the turning point where you said, I think I'm going to leave journalism behind, and I think I'm going to once and for all abandon the pre-law idea, the law school idea?
Well, I abandoned the pre-law because at those days it was very, very difficult for a woman to get into law school. So I abandoned that idea, but I did entertain foreign service. I didn't do that, but I got into journalism instead. So after I graduated, the next day I thought, oh, my gosh, what am I going to do with the rest of my life? And I made a big decision then to move out to New Mexico. I thought I'd be winging it on cowboys and Indian paintings and whatever I could do to survive. And so that's what I did. I moved out to Taos and lived there for 3 years and just – my first year, I had 5 part-time jobs.
Oh, my.
So I did that for a period of time, and then I had a job offer to go with the New Mexican in Santa Fe. So I got back into journalism, and so that really was the way I survived journalism from there on till more recently. But so I painted on my own time.
Now, anybody who's done this lifestyle of putting rent money together and grocery money together from several part-time jobs knows that you can only do it for so long, and you can only do it if there's some really compelling reason, some burning desire. What was it about Taos that made it worth piecing together a living by, I mean, that had to have been a grueling schedule, and then trying to find time to paint as well?
Well, Taos was in the 70s, 71, I think, when I went out. They didn't have a stoplight. It was still kind of the wild and woolly west, and you did see a lot of cowboys and Indians. I don't know if that, generically, if you can group them together like that, but that's sort of the lifestyle. It was very western. Not until more recent years has New Mexico become, I hate to say it, gentrified, become a little more, you know, polished. But then it was a great adventure to be in New Mexico. And so I guess, and it's, of course, the landscape is very dramatic. So it all, you know, the visually and emotionally, it all fit in just what I needed. So I was out of Indianapolis really fast. And in those days, Indianapolis was what we still called India No Place. And there's just nothing going on here. So a lot of things would be better. So I was drawn to it, and I was absolutely happy out there.
What was it like to go to a completely different climate, a different kind of everything? The vegetation's dramatically different from Indianapolis. Even the light had to have been different.
The light, of course, is one of the big beauties of that landscape. And so certainly that's an element. I started missing trees. One of my subjects that I often use are trees, and I use those in my current paintings. And so you have trees along the rivers there, but not a lot of trees. It's mostly a sandy earth, of course, mountain horizons. Mm-hmm. So it's very dramatic. I didn't really take to that landscape totally, but it's a very desirable place to live. The weather is pretty much the way it is here. You have four seasons. This is Santa Fe and Taos are high desert, and it isn't all hot like Phoenix.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You are known now very much for landscapes inspired by trips to Europe, especially trips to Italy. How did you start going abroad, and what draws you back most often?
Well, I say trees. Mm. There's nothing more beautiful than a cypress tree, which you see all over Italy. The cypress and the pine trees, mm-hmm. they spread out and they're just gorgeous. And then you have the formal gardens, which I like. I discovered there, like in the Renaissance, it's very set. It makes good painting. It isn't like an English garden where everything is sort of goes this way and that way, and you can't really get a focus or a view. And it's much easier for me to set up compositions with formal gardens, such as Renaissance. And then it seems like I'm working backwards now in time, whereas I used to be more involved with the French Impressions, the French landscape, and then I'm going back to the Renaissance, and then last trip was in Pompeii, so I was going way back to the ancient Roman garden, which was in Pompeii, and the same kind of very a formal geometric kind of garden space with the hedges and then the fountains, focal points of fountains, and the statues. So I find very appealing shapes, what you call forms in space, that I can paint there. I think I got onto that because in graduate school, I went, got my master's out in Hawaii.
Talk about yet another dramatic change.
Another dramatic change. I went there after New Mexico, and the chairman of my graduate committee had training in Italy. And I found, as I say, trees were an important element. In that case, out in Hawaii, my thesis was on a tropical landscape. Hmm. So you have the big leaves and the flowers, then the waterfalls. But I think the way he was training us, he knew all these things that had been discovered during the Renaissance. And so I think I picked that up from him. So when I finished out in Hawaii, there was something that came to my mind. I've got to go to Italy.
Was it what you expected?
Oh, my goodness.
Was it
yes,
more?
Yes, yes. It's wonderful. I say bless those Italians for preserving all that wonderful history that they do. I never get tired of it.
Mm-mm. I see a gleam in your eye figuring out how to have a home over there as well.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that'll be the next story, I think.
Have to set up your little not-for-profit on the side so you can take donations to do that. when you are going to paint from nature, how do you know you've found the right perspective? Do you go out and scout ahead of time? I just had this flash of a vision of you walking with all of your materials and just walking around a hillside, looking down into a garden, trying to figure out where the absolute best perspective. Does something jump out at you and say, here, this is the spot? Or is it more calculated than that?
When I come to a new garden, I spend at least 2 or 3 hours just walking around. Everything is so beautiful, but everything doesn't work out as a painting, and I'm looking for composition. And something that I guess is just into me now, you know, I say, wow. I use a viewer, which is like looking through a camera, so I can hold it up, and it's a little sort of rectangular box as sort of the proportion of 3x4, which is what you use often in painting. My little viewer is 3 inches by 4 inches. So I just use that, and I get the perimeter of the idea of that's going to be a painting. And I may find 2 paintings out of a huge garden, maybe 3. And, of course, I run out of time, so I can only do so many. But it does take a lot of art for me is a perceptual thing. It's what you see. The more you see, the richer the experience is. So I can zero in on something or get a big panoramic view, either one, whatever seems to work. But I look for composition.
You have, along the way, discovered some old, maybe even ancient techniques for mixing paint. Let's talk about that a bit.
In Venice, I was really interested in materials and techniques of the Renaissance. The Venetian painters really developed oil painting. The Renaissance started in Florence with big frescoes, but you couldn't do frescoes in Venice. So the Venetians had just recently at the beginning of, I guess late 1400s, had learned the oil painting techniques from the Flemish artists. And so they started experimenting with the different ways of putting oil down in the underpainting, which means putting one color or maybe a toned ground like a red, earth red, and then building up the colors on top of that, and often very thin colors like they call glazing. I studied that technique, and I found out what pigments they had used, just how they worked up their canvases, and a lot about their composition, of course, too. I bought a lot of raw pigments when I was in Florence, and increased my supply of pigments in Venice. But I grind my own colors. By pigments, I mean it's like earth. It's like powdered form. I have a table. I grind that with linseed oil. And I just get it until the oil is, sometimes you grind it for 15 minutes or longer, just to get all of the oil and pigment all floating together. So it's like a tube of paint has been made that way only by machine. But I like to do it by hand because you can increase the amount of pigment or decrease the amount of pigment in relation to the oil. So I grind my own pigments. That's part of the ritual of doing painting, I guess, is have all those pigments ground.
Not to give away any trade secrets or anything, but for many of us, painting, let's say, a person's face is a matter of going over and picking out maybe 2 colors of crayons from the box. But if we're talking about this layered technique, there might be how many layers might there be if you're trying to capture the tone in someone's hand? You're painting someone's hand, let's say. Are we talking 3 layers? Are we talking 12 or 20?
It could be any of those. And one thing I discovered in Venice is that, like Titian, the great Venetian painter, in a microscope, I saw a piece of pigment that had fallen off or been removed from one of his paintings had 34 layers of paint on it. So I don't think I do quite that many, but I do put quite a few layers on. I find the more layers you put on, the richer the painting, the more depth of the color becomes one color underneath slightly shows through the next layer, and there's just more of a symphony of color that goes on. So I probably do maybe 10 or 15 layers.
We'll be back with more of Sharon's interview with painter Rosanna Hardin Hall. But first, a quick break.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI Public Radio.
We're back with Sharon's conversation with painter Rosanna Hardin Hall.
As if you don't have enough things on your plate, you have taken all of the aesthetic skills and practical skills and applied them to a building. Let's talk about your home and the carriage house and the villa.
The villa sort of started last January. It became available. It had been a rental property. The house I live in has four large apartments, plus the top floor, which is where I live. So I have a sort of a garret up there. And I approach the garret through outdoor stairway. It's a wrought iron stairway that goes up. I guess you'd call it a fire escape. But it's easy for me to scamper up and down there. But other people find it really threatening, particularly men. So
you have peace and quiet. This affords you privacy.
Oh, it does, and I'm up there with the squirrels, and it's a wonderful world up there in the trees. But in order to show my paintings, I realized that a lot of people don't like to climb that stairway. So I took over the cottage, which is in back of the main house, and which, by the way, was on the Woodruff Place home tour in the last weekend in June. From January until June, like the day before the open house, we're working on the villa. I call it villa because I've painted in so many other people's villas that I thought, well, I want my own villa. So,
absolutely. You're entitled.
So I call it Villa dell'Artista, which would be the Italian for the artist villa. We had to repaint the whole thing. I did do it in the sort of a yellow ochre tone, a color I often use. That's one of the traditional colors in oil painting, is the yellow that you often use in traditional painting. Then I had a lot of my mother, who passed away about a year and a half ago, had saved a lot of the antiques in the family. They go back to several generations. So I had those in storage, and I brought those out and put a lot of the sitting pieces in the villa, and then beautiful carpets, and I found beautiful damask draperies that had been stored away in boxes up in my garret. That's also the storeroom up at the top. So a lot of trunks and boxes. I went through all those and found these beautiful damask drapes and also lace curtains. And so I used those. Then she also had some crystal chandeliers, so they're hanging up there. Mm. And then, of course, the main focus are my paintings. I have about 64 paintings, and they just seemed to, it was a perfect environment for them. It's sort of the old world charm, I guess you'd say.
Mm-hmm. So. And in addition to being a venue for your paintings, you are offering this as a place for people to use for what kind of events?
I'm going to offer it to civic groups, especially art groups. We have a nice large kitchen. There is a place they can, you know, have catered-in dinners, or they can do their own, you know, provide their own food, however they decide to do that. they can, you know, have their meetings there. It wouldn't be a huge group. It would probably be up to about 25 people. They can come and have their meeting there, or if they want me to offer them a little meeting like the Adventures of Painting in Italy or something about the history of Woodruff Place. So I could give them a short program if that's the idea now. But it would be civic groups, anyone who's interested in the arts, at least for a program of the arts.
I don't know that I've heard of anybody else doing anything quite like this in town. Are you aware of anybody else? Or is this a new venture?
I think it's a little bit unique. And I was just lucky to have everything come together, the house, the furnishings, and, of course, my paintings. It's all in the house. It's an 1889 vintage house. So it served well for Renaissance gardens because we do have pretty gardens around our house. There's a lot of beautiful old ironwork that came out of the old English theater and hotel that used to be on the Circle Monument. So it kind of has an old world, maybe you'd call it New Orleans charm. And it just all seemed to fit together.
The wrought iron staircase in the garret was bringing up that image.
Yeah.
You know, as a gardener myself, I'd be remiss in asking you, spending all this time in gardens, do you garden yourself?
No. I'll tell you, I'm allergic to poison ivy, like the plague. And whenever I get near a flower bed, I think the poison ivy jumps on me. No, I'm a visual person. I like to admire someone else's beautiful garden and paint it. I'm really a recorder or an admirer. I just love looking at beautiful gardens. And we have a young man who takes care of the garden. And then we have a tenant who loves gardening too. So he does a lot of work with it. So I just let them do their thing and then I can stand there and paint what they've done.
Sounds like a fair division of labor. Let them do battle with the weeds and you can document what's happened.
And luckily they aren't allergic to poison ivy, so they're lucky.
Obviously you've led a life of many adventures so far. What else is out on the horizon? Any other places you think you might travel in the near future?
I'm still in my Italianate period.
Okay.
And I still have places I want to paint there. I want to go back to Venice. I have an entree to do gardens, secret gardens in Venice.
What are secret gardens?
I'm quoting from a book I found in the Accademia Museum in Venice, called The Secret Gardens of Venice. Yeah. So I bought that book several years ago. And last time I was in Venice, when was it, a year ago this summer, I went to a home, a visit, a friend, and we were talking about gardens. He said, you know, my neighbor upstairs wrote a book about the gardens in Venice. And I said, what's the name of it? And he brought it out. I said, oh, I've read that. I love that book. He said, oh, I'll call her upstairs right now and have her come down and you can talk to her about it. I don't know whether it's going to work out or not, but it's that's one of the things I'm thinking about doing. I still have a lot of work to do in Italy yet. And then where do I go? Who knows? I'm sure it'll happen. I've been to a lot of places, maybe England. I'm kind of thinking those may be my heritage roots, England, and I don't know, maybe England. Or maybe travel the world. Who
there
knows?
You go. Something
and I'm thinking about going back to the tropics, back to maybe not just Hawaii, but maybe Tahiti.
Ooh.
Some friends of mine who are French were there recently, and they said it's still very much like it was when Paul Gauguin painted there, one of my favorite painters.
Painter Rosanna Hardin Hall. For more information about her paintings or about La Via dell'Artista, you may call Rosanna at 972-0898. Again, 972-0898.
On today's What'll We Do, we have ways for you to celebrate the last precious few hours of summer.
And celebrate the first few hours of fall.
There we go.
There we go. That's much more optimistic.
That's